Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RTE.ie, Tara Hogan is on the line, David Phelan is on the line. Tara, what's the name of the travel company that you're having problems with?
Hi, Joe. We're travelling with Love Holidays.
Okay, stay there. David Phelan, what's the name of the travel company that you're having problems with?
Good afternoon, Joe. It's Love Holidays also.
Okay, Tara, what is your problem? What happened?
Oh, so we were... our flight actually got delayed, and that was kind of a blessing in the end.
Okay.
But a friend of ours had flown out ahead of us and got to the hotel and was told a third party had gone insolvent and we couldn't check in. And we weren't arriving until all hours of the morning. It was 2 o'clock in the morning before we kind of got out of the airport. We would have been arriving to a hotel with nowhere to stay for that night. I was lucky enough like that I was able to notify my dad and he got us an apartment while we were on the flight. But we only heard of this on the runway. Love Holidays never informed us of anything at all.
And how much had you paid Love Holidays?
It was over 1,300 altogether for a holiday.
So you had paid your
paid in full.
Okay, David, what happened? Where are you now, Tara?
We were in an apartment that we had to get ourselves.
Yeah,
Love Holidays still haven't come in. In Lanzarote.
Lanzarote, okay. David Phelan. David, happened you in Love Holidays?
Well, our story was, Joe, we were initially booked to fly out of Cork Airport on Tuesday morning at 5:50 a.m. So we set off to the airport, arrived in Cork Airport and realised, looking at the boards, checking to see what time where the gate was, no flight to Gran Canaria. So I spoke with someone in the airport and they told me, sorry, your flight left yesterday. And I was like, sure, my travel documentations state that I'd be travelling today. And no, that was it. So all came to all, we just headed back for home because we knew we were flying out of Cork.
And all your travel documentation, what letter heading? What was the company it was under?
It was Love Holidays.
So they told you that your flight was on Tuesday. You arrived on Tuesday and you were told, oh, by the way, that flight was changed.
Yep.
When did you book the flight? When did you pay?
I was paid back in last September, early October, Joe.
Okay. Had you... And you had children with you, so they're obviously... Everyone's disappointed. So you went home. What did you do?
Well, when I got home, like, there was devastation because this is our first family holiday together. We have a 10-year-old, 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. And this was actually our first foreign family holiday, so there was wicked excitement.
Yeah.
Wicked excitement turned to wicked bad. The kids were absolutely devastated. They were roaring, crying. They were, you know, just pure disheartened. So when I got back, I got back at 9 a.m, I actually got through to someone in Love Holidays because they do have an Irish, an Irish number based in Carlow or somewhere like that. But I don't know if the God sent is actually in Carlow. But I got in contact with a lovely girl. She said, "Look, I'm so sorry. We look into it." That was Tuesday. Yesterday was Wednesday. I rang him yesterday. Still same thing. Oh, it's been looked into. Blah, blah, blah. I'm actually currently in Dublin Airport as we speak, Joe.
Okay.
Waiting to get on a 3 p.m. flight out to Gran Canaria out of my own pocket again.
Well, you've rebooked the whole family.
I did. Yeah, I did. And I had to borrow that money, Joe, to book this holiday again.
I can't imagine how much that cost.
I couldn't leave the devastation happen. The kids were absolutely so excited to go. Not going.
Now,
absolutely heartbroken.
Now, we get on to Ryanair, in fairness, and they say the flight from Cork to Gran Canaria was due to depart at 0555 on Tuesday, the 4th of June. However, due to a routine schedule adjustment that was subsequently rescheduled to depart a day earlier at 05:50 on Monday, the 3rd of June, an email notification was sent to the email address provided on the passenger's booking at 7:08 on the 12th of October last year. Advising them of their options to either accept this flight time change, move flight free or charge, or receive a full refund. The email address, this passenger, as far as Ryanair understand, the email address accepted the flight change at 08:28 on the 12th of October last year. Were you aware of that? No, obviously.
No, Joe, because do you know what happened was, when you book with Love Holidays, now it has changed since January, when you book with Love Holidays, they set up a genetical email address on your behalf. I had no access to that Gmail. Like, why would I turn up to a flight on a Tuesday morning to book onto,
so
not
who has
that it
access,
was gone 24 hours before?
So who has access to that email that loveholidays.ie
well,
set up on your behalf?
Back to Love Holidays, Joe.
Well, Ryanair are adamant, and they do, in fairness, anyone that travels with Ryanair, as I do, or Aer Lingus, as I do, you know, if there's a change, you'll get a text or a rapid email telling you well in advance of that change. So this email, loveholidays.ie, which is their Irish incarnation, they Ryanair are adamant, they sent them, who did the booking, an email last October to say the flight had been changed. Which is, in fairness to them, a lot of notice. It's 7 months,
eight months notice.
And they say the email address accepted the flight change, but they never forwarded it to you. They never told you.
No, because all my travel itinerary was for Tuesday, Joe. Tuesday the 4th to Tuesday the 11th. Or Tuesday, whatever the Tuesday was. All my documentation I have printed off is all dates Tuesday to Tuesday.
Okay, now
Monday to Monday.
Love Holidays are saying that the problem is that FTI, which is a German travel company, is the parent company of one of our many accommodation and transfer suppliers. It's a parent company of You Travel. On Monday this week, the FTI group announced it was filing for insolvency. Loveholiday.ie tell us we asked them for a spokesperson, they were unable. We would like to stress that a very small proportion of Loveholidays.ie customers are affected by this news, and we are working closely with our wider network of suppliers to honour all existing bookings and minimise any disruption. As a context, this is the equivalent of less than 3% of all forward bookings in Ireland. But as a context, you're shedding out 100%, David. Your holiday, so you had to rebook flights off your own bat at very short notice, which are expensive to say the least. And what about accommodation?
Well, I rang our initial accommodation on Tuesday to inform I wasn't actually coming on Tuesday. And the lady, in fairness, the place we're staying was absolutely fantastic on the phone, Joe. She said, look, you have this apartment booked from today till next Tuesday. But she said, get on your new flight on Thursday and come out and it won't be a problem. We'll sort you out. The apartment is here for you when you come on Thursday. So that was off a number, a direct number that I rang, that it was on the booking information. I rang the direct line to the accommodation. Now, Joe, I'm down €2,500 more.
Wow.
Of €2,000 already spent.
Good God. And have loveholidays.ie been on to you?
No. I've been contacting them numerous times, and one time was the only time yesterday I got through to them since Tuesday.
Okay.
Nothing back.
Okay, joe@rt.ie, 51551. Is the text number, 0818715815. Tara, to come back to your disaster, you discovered fortuitously, because some of your buddies had gone out earlier, they landed in the hotel that you booked through loveholidays.ie. Yeah. But the hotel, what exactly did the hotel tell your buddies?
That the third party had gone insolvent, so they never received payment for our hotel.
From FTI?
They haven't received payment.
Did you ever hear of FTI before this disaster?
No. And Love Holidays sent us, they would have known even the morning before and never thought to let any of us know, give us any notice. And then when we tried to contact them here, we had to contact them. They still weren't contacting us. There were absolutely no help at all whatsoever. And so, kept dropping calls on us.
Okay. So you sent your money, any money you paid, which is a lot, and your pals went to loveholidays.ie.
Okay.
Now, you're on the plane, or getting on the plane. Your pals tell you, listen, we're here at the hotel. You're going to arrive at 2 o'clock in the morning. We've nowhere to stay. So who kicked into action then?
I actually rang my dad. My dad is only after coming home from here. He comes out here every year. So he was able to organise an apartment for us for a couple of nights.
Good man.
And we thought within those couple of nights that Love Holidays would have this sorted and would provide us with new accommodation or pay for our accommodation.
Yeah.
That we paid them for, but they never did, never got back to us. No.
So when you, Tara, when you landed in Lanzarote and you then got the text, where did you go to the hotel to pick up your pals?
No, our friend already came to the apartment my dad had organised.
And had
it? It was only one girl on her own as well.
Oh, wow.
That had flown out ahead of us.
Yeah. And she lands in the hotel and they say, the company, well, see, the company you paid through Love Holidays hasn't gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But they say the company they paid, FTI, have gone into insolvency. So, thanks to your dad, Tara.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's Father's Day on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll have to be good to him now this year.
God, he's some man for. Well done. So at least you had
some. Yeah, he is brilliant.
Because you arrived in the middle of the night.
Yeah. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning when we were arriving at the apartment.
Okay, and cleanly, your pal had arrived that previous evening, thankfully. So and when did you try contacting Love Holidays as David did,
the
but didn't get
morning.
Anywhere? Yeah. Oh,
well, Tina started right away in the hotel, in our original hotel.
Okay.
She started trying to contact them then, and they said they would get back to her and never did. And then the next morning, we all tried, all three of us were ringing, and it was the same thing. We'll just get back to you. So sorry about this. We'll just get back to you. And
did they say to you? Did they say to you? Have you got accommodation?
Tina, did they ask you? Did you have accommodation? They never asked me. All they said is, as far as they were concerned, we didn't have accommodation. They were leaving us abandoned, with nowhere to go. As far as they were concerned.
Okay, now Tara, well, I'll go to David first, bring him back in. Joe at RT.ie. David, what was the benefit of you booking through loveholidays.ie?
Well, I've used Love Holidays for years, Joe, and never had a problem. Everything was always paying sailing with the company.
Okay.
The good thing about Love Holidays is you can pay a small deposit today to book the holiday, and you can pay monthly installments, which I was doing,
okay.
€200 a month. Coming out of my account. So that's why I always use them. And I've never had a problem. And anyone that I know ever used them never had a problem. But it's just this once.
Mm.
Well, like Tara said, trying to get through to Joe is an absolute nightmare. Like at 4 a.m. or maybe 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, I discovered you go onto their thing and it's all automated. And it was picking up that I was supposed to be in resort or flying out, due to fly out. So they put me through to a call centre inland in Gran Canaria, Las Palmas. And he was telling me, oh, look, it's nothing we can do. You need to ring Ryanair. And I said, hold on a second. I didn't book my holiday with Ryanair. I booked my holiday with Love Holidays.
But Love Holidays say, in the fine print, they say to you, check your flight the day before. It would have been too late, but check it. It would have been already gone. Check your flight the day before. That's their out.
But, but only the previous Tuesday, Joe, Tuesday last week, they took their last payment out of my account. So it's not like they weren't looking at my account to say, hold on a second, something's after going wrong here or something. There was money. The last sum of money was taken from my account last Tuesday.
Okay.
So it's not like they weren't looking at my account to say, oh, he's actually pushed to the side.
And
know?
What the Love Holidays, when you, I was on their site there this morning. When you get on to their site, you say to them, I want 2 weeks in Mallorca, whatever, a specific time. I want a hotel with a pool. I've 2 plus 3 children. And they trawl. They go through various websites, do they? That's what they offer.
They do. That's what they do, yeah. That's what they offer. But they give you your full package information there and then, Joe. They say, like, as soon as you put in your search information, they give you the package. It comes up straight away in the next search, you know. Prices are there. Everything is there to book straight away. You pay your small deposit of €30 or if you want to pay full balance there and then. And everything is sent to you within minutes. The second you proceed that order, you have all your travel indemnity straight away. Everything is sent to you straight away.
One of the points you make is that, as you say, you booked last September. In your case, the flight was changed last October, and they for some reason, they never told you, which is bizarre. When did you book your holiday with Love Holidays?
It was actually last August when I booked. July, even. Could have been July or August I booked last year.
And why did you go with Love Holidays?
It was just easy go through an agency, you know, everything's done. You pay them that money and they book your flights, your accommodation for you, and you don't have to worry about anything. And they did change our flights as well, but we did receive the email to notify us. But that was a couple of months ago. But, I've had no hassle. I've flown with them before.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
This is the first time I've had any hassle. I'm just so shocked at how unhelpful this
is. Yeah, but the thing is, David's problem is completely different to your problem. Your problem is, Love Holidays are blaming FTI for going, they're saying FTI went bust.
Yeah, but like David said, we booked with Love Holidays. We're still their client.
Yeah, exactly. I take your point. But David's problem was Love Holidays. It's not that he landed at the place and they hadn't paid. It's that the flight was changed and they didn't bother telling him. Here's another David. This David P is the first man, the Monday flight man that was on Tuesday. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah, like that, I got an email from Love Holidays to say they changed my flight from a morning flight to an evening flight and that was overbooked.
Okay.
Then I just rang Ryanair and said, come here, is there a flight overbooked? What's the problem? Oh, no problem at all. And Ryanair, there and then, changed my flight back to the original flight time with the original seat at no extra charge.
Okay. So why did Love Holiday change your flight time?
I have no idea, Joe. And that's the problem with them. I mean, as I said, to book with them and you get everything in the one go and it's a cheap deposit, it's very, I've flown with them 4 or 5 times, myself and the wife. It's very, very simple. But yeah, we found the last couple of times that they are changing stuff around. They do, as David said, set up a separate email address, but you do get the password to it somewhere. So you can get into the Ryanair in this case, you can get into their website and have a look to see what they've done.
David Phelan's point in, this is David O'Callaghan I'm talking to. David Phelan's point, David, is that Ryanair do send out, I know they do. They text people or email people well in advance if they know. Obviously, there's a...
Oh, no, Ryanair do, Joe, yeah.
But you never got
Love
that.
Love Holidays book... No, Love Holidays book you under a Mickey Mouse email address to a degree. Kind of all... You wouldn't remember it if you tried. It's a pure spurious job, Joe, and that's the problem with it.
Yeah,
unless you specifically look for that, you're not going to get it.
There was the email you're allowed to set up emails, but and they're a reputable company. But there's no facility... Love Island, Love Holiday. God, I wish I was on Love Island. Love Holiday. So the three lads. You can imagine. Anyway, loveholiday.ie, they don't have a facility. When Ryanair emailed them, to forward that immediately to your, to the email address they have for you, David O'Callaghan. No.
Well, there's many a company out there that can forward email address.
Yeah, isn't it straightforward? And when you got on to Ryanair, they said, okay, we just change it back. And they didn't indicate why it had been changed. It wasn't overbooking, which is what Love Holiday told you. David O'Callaghan. Okay, let me take a quick break. There's more coming in at this. joe@loveholiday.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about loveholidays.ie. They say one of their main suppliers, it's a... Loveholidays.ie is an online, if you can imagine Car Trawler, that brilliant company that was set up by the Turley brothers, 20 years ago, where they basically trawl other, Love Holidays trawl various websites on your behalf to try and get the cheapest holiday according to your spec. Now we've had three people have had difficulties with them for different reasons. This is a problem. It's not all to do with money. One is definitely communication. The second is a miscommunication, it seemed. We don't know who's... It's not deliberate, obviously. And the third was Tara, who arrived in... And her pals arrived in Lanzarote 2-3 nights ago to find that the hotel hadn't been paid. Edel Quinlan, Edel, good afternoon. How much have you paid to loveholiday.ie?
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for taking my call. So we've paid a deposit of just short of €1,500. And we're due to fly out on our holidays in just less than 2 weeks' time. So okay. The balance is due this weekend. And I'm just a little bit concerned. My flag was raised there a couple of months ago. I saw online a girl who also had booked through Love Holidays had flown out with her two children to Euro Disney. Mm-hmm. And similar to that, she got out. But when she got to the hotel, there was no payment made. And in essence, she'd nowhere to stay. And, you know, we would be in similar circumstances that we wouldn't have the funds to kind of rebook. Or okay. So I'm just wondering, you know, do we hand over in, like, I think we've about another 2,000 still to pay out. You know, do I pay it out this weekend and then suddenly find when we get out there? Now, on the app, it says that everything is confirmed. I did kind of take one step ahead and actually email the hotel.
Okay.
And they said that there is a booking there for us and that they were looking forward to welcoming us, you know, on our holiday. So that kind of reassured me a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's just, is that payment going to be made? That's where I have the issue.
Well, is there any you've made the payment. Is there any indication that the payment has been made via Love Island to the hotel?
Well, not so far, because I think we've only paid the deposit. So obviously the main balance of our holiday
now,
is due this weekend.
Just to be clear, from Love Holidays, they say their problem is the FTI Group, which is the parent company of one of our main accommodation and transfer suppliers, YOU Travel. Is there any mention of YOU Travel on your any information you've
Nothing.
Got?
Nothing. And when I kind of went through the chat robot, I just got the automated, you know, thing to say that they were, you know, that obviously people had heard about the problem with FTI and that unless you had heard from them, that there isn't a problem. But as you can see from your previous callers, that's not the case. So I just don't want to hand over a sizable, you know, balance to then realise and to get out, you know, with my partner and two children and then realise we've nowhere to stay.
No thanks. And you paid for $1,500 already. It's a lot of money. Why did you go with loveholiday.ie?
Because we actually went to the same resort 2 years ago. We'd no issues with Love Holidays before.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was just I'd heard rumours over the last couple of months that there was, you know, the beginnings of problems with Love Holidays. So I kind of said, oh, OK, we'll just keep an eye on this. And then when I heard this morning when I was in the car that you were going to obviously be speaking about it, I went, I'll definitely tune in.
Okay.
So I'm glad I did.
So are Love Holidays cheaper? Did they work out cheaper than booking your flight direct?
Because I tried to do it separately with, you know, through the airline companies and it does work out cheaper. Now we're going all inclusive this time around, which, you know, we said, look, we've worked hard all year. We're going not have to worry about,
So how do loveholiday.ie make their money? You know,
I couldn't tell you that. I mean, if you're on some kind of a deal with the travel agents over there, or possibly because they're dealing directly, maybe with, you know, it's possible dealing directly with the airlines and directly with
but remember,
so many people through.
In fairness to Michael O'Leary and Ryanair, he says, whatever price is on our website. Is the price that he'll say, of course, the cheapest price, but that's fair enough. You say that is the price everyone pays, and we don't deal necessarily with Travel Aid. We don't give them a discount. That was going back 30 years. So for loveholiday.ie, they don't get the Ryanair flight any cheaper than you would directly.
Possibly not. No.
When you get your documentation, is the price of the flight and the hotel broken down?
Yes, yeah, so this is the thing. We're actually flying out, so we're flying through Cork as well.
Okay.
Just because I found it easier and quieter with children.
Brilliant, yeah.
And So we're travelling out with Ryanair, but we're coming back with Aer Lingus. So they obviously are able to get, because if I was flying out, if I was booking it myself directly, I wouldn't be going out with Ryanair and coming back with Aer Lingus. I'd just probably go with the one carrier, because if that's what they're saying, that it's working out cheaper, or it's the same price for everybody, as you say, well, then why would you travel out with one airline and travel back with another? That just doesn't make sense, you know. Again, 2 years ago, we did the same thing, except we flew from Dublin. We travelled out with Ryanair and travelled back with Aer Lingus, and we'd no issues. We'd no issues with the resort. Everything was fine. So, And I know it's only kind of when, like, nobody kind of ever comes online and says, or on radio shows and says, oh, you know, I love holidays. They were brilliant. We'd no issues. Mm. It's only when something bad happens.
Yeah, well, we want
you know,
to,
that we kind
well,
of
you
get.
See, can you imagine? When David landed in Cork Airport on Tuesday morning with his three children, 10, 6 and 2, I think. To be told your flight left yesterday. Can you imagine the children, their first holiday abroad?
And I know what he's saying, because I actually about the they do generate. He's right in what he said. They do generate a kind of a fictitious email that's kind of linked to your account with Love Holidays. But if Ryanair are trying to get through to you, they won't get through to you, because you can't actually log into that email, because you don't have the wherewith to actually log into it. So what I did was I went in to my Ryanair and linked my own email address to so that if I get any, you know, I suppose bump from Ryanair, but at least I'll know about it, because, you know, they just give you a fictitious email that they link to your Love Holidays account.
So now, then again, they could.
Because you give them all the information, so I don't understand why they're changing it. And they don't give you the information either. Like, they don't. Like, I only happened to stumble across that email, you know, when I went in with my reference number to bring up my flight on my Ryanair account. And it was that said, oh, no, that there's no email linked to that reference number. And I said, God, that's very strange, you know, because that's the email I gave. But it was when I went back into the Love Holidays app that I realised, actually, no, there's a, you know, it was some gobbledygook email at gmail.com, do you know? But there's no way you could log into that, because you wouldn't have the password or anything for it.
But I'm just trying to, like, the flights at different times of the day, different days of the week are different prices.
Yes.
And you're not given a break. Maybe that's how they make. They have to, by the way, they have to make money. They have to make a profit. They have to have a reason.
Oh, absolutely.
To continue going.
Yeah.
Okay, but my understanding is that Ryanair. Well, it hasn't been contradicted by anyone. My understanding is that Ryanair tell people if they directly tell the email through which the booking was made that the flight has changed. Now, maybe the flight change could be from early morning, which can be expensive, to late in the evening, which can be cheaper. But I presume they give you they reimburse the extra. So what are you going? I know, Edel, you've emailed the hotel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now should the hotel? Okay, but should the hotel at this stage have received any money from Love Holidays?
You see, that I don't know. They didn't say that the booking had been confirmed. All that they said was that there was a booking there in my name, as they were looking forward to welcoming me on my holiday. They never said whether that they'd been paid. Now, maybe, I don't know, are they waiting for the balance of the money this weekend before that they, you know, before they reimburse the hotel? I just don't know. I don't know how it works. There's nothing stopping me from emailing the hotel to say.
Well, what about emailing Love Holiday?
I did email them, but I haven't received anything back. I tried their chat robot, because this Sandy girl that you get, and it's quite humorous actually, because you just go around in circles. But I have emailed the company themselves, so I'm just waiting to hear back from them. I haven't heard anything as yet, because I've only just emailed them within the last hour. As of right now, Joe, everything is confirmed on my Love Holidays app. The flight.
But still, it's a pain. Same way now, Aer Lingus pilots are voting for strike action. It looks like it's going to be 99% in favour of strike action, which sends the heart crossways, and people have been saving all year for their for their holiday, and that looks intractable because Aer Lingus at the Labour Court offered them 9.5%. The pilots want 22%. So that's unbridgeable, absolutely unbridgeable. Mm-hmm. So Aer Lingus would want to, or the top brass or indeed IALPA would want to reassure people quickly that it's going to be, that it's going to be sorted, because it's a pain for people. And then you have the whole thing which Michael O'Leary rightly has been going on about again, the air traffic controller strike. And it's a Friday, so there must be an air traffic controller strike in France. And of course, not only do, even if you're not going to France, they won't even let you fly through French airspace, which other countries do if there's a strike. But anyway, so there's hundreds of flights, he said, tomorrow cancelled into France and over France. OK, Edele, Tara Hogan. Tara, thanks, Edele. Keep in touch. We're here all summer. Bring our email address with you on holidays, please. joe@rte.ie. And we will try and help people.
Would you mind if I just said thanks to Jose and Maria in the Cactus Department that put us up for a couple of nights?
Yeah, okay. Jose and Maria.
Yeah, the Cactus Department.
Yeah, okay. Jose and Maria, are they friends of yours?
Mum and Dad stay in their apartments every year.
Oh, brilliant. Gracias, Jose Maria. And Maria. Okay, Tara, enjoy the rest of your holiday. What's the weather like
Tara?
Bye-bye. What's the weather like, Tara?
It's grand, yeah, it's lovely. Yeah, we can't complain. It's definitely better than home.
And is this the first time yourself and Cliona have gone on holiday together?
Yeah, it's a girl's holiday, our first girl's holiday.
Okay, I hope the two of you get on with each other.
Oh, yeah, we're trying. We're making a good go at it.
Have a good go. Get through the gap. Have a good go. David Phelan. David, get going today at 3 o'clock
I'm just at the gate here now.
Good man, okay.
I'm waiting at the gate here at Dublin Airport. Joe's
well, bon voyage and fingers crossed.
Thanks very much.
joe@rte.ie. Bring that email, which is everywhere you go. Back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
On this day, 80 years ago, about an hour ago, Churchill has told the House of Commons that the Allies have landed in Normandy, D-Day. There's a breakthrough already at Omaha and Utah. Prisoners have been, German prisoners have been captured. Hitler apparently has slept in. So that has delayed the response time from Rommel and the crew. And what's the latest? 9 minutes ago, medics at Omaha, though the fighting continues Omaha Beach, General Bradley has sent word that troops formerly pinned down on the beaches are advancing up heights beyond. Some are attacking Colvelds from there, where defending Germans are said to have been getting drunk and shouting orders in English. More than 19,000 men have been landed on the beach, while the medics both here and on others are performing extraordinary acts of bravery as they tend to the wounded. Many of them are caught in the crossfire. The medical battalion of the 1st Division has suffered such dreadful losses that their wounded are being tended by their surviving members. And Pegasus Bridge was taken just after 1 o'clock, and that's been, as you know, in many a movie. By the way, from what I could work out last night from reading Richard Doherty, especially, who's done a lot of work on the history of Irish people in North and South, obviously, in the Second World War, 60,000 from the North, approximately slightly more from the South, joined the Allies, including about 5,000 members of the Irish Defence Forces, who were for a long time classified as deserters. But anyway, 60,000 from the North, 60,000 from, that's about 120,000 to 125,000, and about 5,000 were killed. About, again, fortunate phrase, 50-50, 2,500 from the North, 2,500 from the separate state, which was the Free State at the time. So it had an enormous Irish involvement. Thomas Blake, Thomas, you were in the RAF. I know it wasn't during wartime, but you got to know some comrades who had served in the Second World War.
That's right, Joe. Yeah, I met them through sort of ex-servicemen's associations. And they were great, great people, really, what they endured. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to get the stories out of them. But they've been through hell in some cases, you know. Fine people.
Tell us a story, because I heard Ryan Tuberty telling this story yesterday on Virgin about Brother Colin Banas from from Dublin. Where's he from, Dublin?
He was born in Usher's Island. That's okay. Where the family was.
In the heart of Dublin,
and,
yeah,
that's right, yeah. And he actually had another connection with James Joyce, with the film The Dead, you know. But anyway, yeah. We'll leave that. But he joined up. RAF, and he one of his jobs when he got landed, when he landed on the beaches, they gave him a motorbike after 2 days after, and he had to go around and try and find those in distress, any sort of old servicemen who had been shot by the Germans and were lying there, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was a great man. After the war, he came back to Ireland, and he just thought about what he should do with his life. So I think he got the calling from above, and he joined mm-hmm. the Friars. And he ended up down in Waterford in the Franciscan Friary. But I heard him speak shortly before he died out in Island Bridge at the July ceremony. Very nice man, you know, beautiful, saintly man. But that was Colin Banas.
And yeah. did he was involved and fought in the Second World War, but he wasn't a padre, he wasn't a chaplain.
Oh, no, he wasn't. Okay. At that stage, he wasn't. That came afterwards. He just... reflecting, I suppose, on the horrors of what he'd endured and see it. So that sort of prompted him to go into the kind of Franciscan Friar. Yeah, maybe. I never spoke to the man, but I'm sorry, I didn't. I should have done.
I suspect he's in our archive. If Ryan Tuberty said he interviewed him many years ago. So I suspect he's in our archive. We might try and get that for tomorrow, because he was anti-war, was he not, obviously?
I'm sure he was. Yeah, being a Franciscan and that.
Franciscan in
war.
Well,
let's face it, most of us are anti-war. It's only,
Of course. I take your point. It's a very strong point. Also from Waterford was Major Redmond Cunningham.
That's right. I know his nephew lives down there, Tom, and he's an ex-mayor of Waterford. But the story goes, he was an architect working in Belfast, and he joined up. And he was commissioned as the Royal Engineers. And he found himself, one of the jobs he had to do was pretty dangerous, from what I hear. He had to go in ahead of the landing craft and sort out the beaches. There was mines on the beaches that the Germans mm-hmm. had laid. And he had to kind of dismantle them and use his skills to do that. But he was wounded, you know, he sustained injuries, and but he survived. He got back to Ireland. Yeah.
And who was the man from Dundrum who disappeared 80 years ago today?
I don't know. You might be confusing me with somebody
It might be. Let me go. Stay there, Thomas, because I read your letter this morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me go to Michael Trainor. And I know, Michael, you've written a book called Petticoat Pilots about Irish female aviators. But you want to talk about 23-year-old William McCoy.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. Yes, a young lad from... actually, he was born Beech Hill, which is not too far away from your studio there at, around the corner from the Donnybrook bus garage. He got married only in June 1943 over in England, in Durham. And 12 months later, he was on a mission from a base, an RAF base in Norfolk, to France. It was eight Stirling aircraft with Bomber Command. And sadly, two of them failed to return that night, which was the last night stroke this morning. And he was on board one of those two that failed to return.
Yeah, and that's the man I'm thinking of 80 years ago today.
Yeah, correct.
And from Dundrum. And is he listed in the many books that have been written about World War II? Is he listed as a casualty from Ireland?
You mentioned Richard Doherty there, who has done a terrific book as well. But he's not in the index of that either. And unfortunately, you may be aware of the Office of Public Works that did a lovely book there about remembering the war dead.
Okay.
And he's not listed in that. But I suspect, Joe, what probably happened is that he got married over in England, and his address, you see, would have been maybe in Durham or someplace like that in England. So that's why they never linked him to Ireland, possibly. But he was born here in 1921.
And you've actually found his parents' marriage beside us here in Donnybrook.
Correct, yeah, in Donnybrook Church. In 1915, his parents were married. He was born in 1921. So I'd like to know a little bit more about the family, because if any of them are still around the Dundrum area or the William general area around Donnybrook.
William McKay, whose parents were also called William McKay, and Mary O'Neill. They were married in 1915. So we presume they were born maybe the 1890s.
Around 1890, Joe,
Parents, yeah. William McKay, and what age was he when he was killed?
23. Oh, 23. Holy God. He was a pilot officer on board that Stirling aircraft. Yes, sadly. But what they have done, the Commonwealth Graves, they do wonderful jobs over there. And they have a lovely little grave over there with seven of them buried in it. Four were identified and three weren't. And they maintain it very, very well. It's in a town called beside St. Lo, which is just south of the Normandy beaches there, where they were obviously doing. They were on a special operation, as the way it's determined in the RAF.
And the Stirling was a large bomber. Remember how big of a crew?
Eight on board, Joe.
Oh, and were they all buried together?
No, I don't think so, no. Okay. There's seven in that grave, so I don't know. It's possible maybe that at some stage one of them was returned back to England. I don't know that answer. I have written to RAF Disclosures, but they get so many requests that it could be a few months before we get his actual file.
And do we know, Michael, and some incredible research you're doing, do you know what became of William McKay's widow?
No, I don't. I don't. I can only presume, and this is why I would love to make contact with the family and see did his wife of a year, did she remarry over in England, which is quite a possibility.
Yeah, of course, she was a very young woman.
It could be nice to know if there are descendants of it.
She was English, and they had an address in Durham. Was that near the RAF base, I wonder?
No, that would be no different location. It's just he was attached to a 149 squadron there, Bomber Command in Norfolk.
And tell me, while I have you, about your book, Petticoat Pilots. That's about generally about Irish female aviators.
Yeah, the first Irish female aviators, Joe, and thank you very much. You were going to give it a review back a couple of years ago when it was launched first. But yes, it's the first dozen or so Irish ladies that got involved in aviation back over a century ago. They were wonderful women, absolutely, yeah. And they covered the whole of Ireland, all 12 of them.
Okay, just to let people know what's happening, so to speak, at this time, 80 years ago, on this day, at around 2 o'clock, the remaining German defenders of the 84th Werfer Regiment from the battery on the western flank of Point de Hoc, which we heard about the other day, where they used the fire engine turntable ladders to try and get up the cliff, and they did, an incredible feat. And there was Irish people involved in that. The Germans abandoned their posts there. Guns of the USS Harding hit and destroyed the church bell tower at Verville-sur-Mer. That was at 2:15. 18 minutes ago. Pierre sur le Dain, south of Sword Beach, is liberated by the Staffordshire Yeomanry at 2:25. And fighting here has been especially brutal. And in 13 minutes' time, German troops from the 352 Artillery Regiment report that the Allies are in full control of Colville-sur-Mer. Let me. You mentioned female involvement in aviation, and through Kay Summersby, the remarkable career of Kay Summersby from Cork in the Second World War, who we've been talking about now for nearly a week. We obviously want to talk about women involved in Second World War, Irish women. Dr. Jackie Yukina is from UCG, or NUI Galway, as it's now called. And Jackie, you want us to remember Emily Anderson. Tell us about Emily Anderson.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, Emily Anderson is one of the unsung heroes. She was completely unknown about until relatively recently when I brought out a book last year on her.
Okay.
And she was a co-worker. She was the most senior of the female code breakers at Bletchley. And when I say the most, I mean she literally was the most senior wow. woman at Bletchley. And she was an Irish woman, born in Galway, raised in Galway, and recruited to intelligence in the First World War. She was so good that she actually ended up being kept on during the interwar period and was very much to the fore in the Second World War as well, in both the East Africa campaign against the Italians, okay. but also, of course, on the D-Day landings back at Bletchley okay, when she returned to Bletchley.
And I've actually read your book. It's fantastic. It's called The Queen okay. of Codes, The Secret Life of Emily Anderson. She was lecturing in Galway, one of the fascinating attributes. She was fluent in German for a start, and
yes.
had studied. Tell us about her life.
I suppose what's interesting about her life is she grew up almost in a very insulated environment of the quadrangle in University College Galway, as it was then, because her father was the college president.
Okay.
And they kind of lived a very isolated life because they were very senior in society.
Okay.
And they couldn't really mix. And they were Presbyterians, Joe, as well, which I think meant that they were a little bit isolated from the predominantly Catholic society of Galway at the time. So they didn't attend schools locally. They ended up being okay. taught by a Swiss governess. So they became fluent, all of the children, there were four of them, became fluent in French and German. And I think that in itself meant that she did actually speak German like a native, and she went on to study it for her degree. And she eventually became the professor of German at University College Galway at the time. So she's a brilliant German linguist, but she also speaks other modern European languages like Italian and French as well.
And how was she spotted? How did she end up as a code breaker in Bletchley, senior?
Well, you know, Joan, with everything to do with intelligence, all roads lead to Cambridge. And I think her father had been at Cambridge. He'd studied physics there. And when the war broke out, the Second World War broke out, she had already been recruited in the First World War, largely because, of course, all the men were being sent off to the front. They needed code breakers urgently because messages were now being transmitted wirelessly. They couldn't use radios anymore, so they were being transmitted by a Morse code.
Okay.
And they desperately need somebody to break these codes because they were changing every day. So what you would have gotten was a sheet full of a mixture of letters and numbers in groups of five. And first of all, you had to decide what language it was written in. Was it French? Was it German? Was it Italian? And then you had to try and make sense of gobbledygook. And the people who were best at doing that were basically linguists, people like Emily Anderson, who was a very experienced was able to look at patterns and repetitions on and say, well, OK, that's likely to be a verb. That's likely to be, you know,
brilliant.
She was able
brilliant.
To look at things and make sense of them.
Yeah.
And she was better than anybody else at it.
An incredible skill.
Yeah,
an
it
incredible.
Is. It's extraordinary.
For some.
Yeah, it's mind blowing. I mean, for most of us, if you looked at it, you say, how the heck could you make any sense, top nor tail of that? But she could, because, and I suppose that's what's great about when she gets to her. The pinnacle of her career, I suppose, was in Cairo in the Second World War, where she was pretty much instrumental in defeating the Italians. But she then comes back to Bletchley. She sorted out the Italians. She goes back to Bletchley in 1963, and she's bang in time for D-Day and the preparations leading up to D-Day, where she switched from Italian codes to German codes. So she wasn't the only woman codebreaker at Bletchley, by the way.
Okay.
There was plenty of them there. Very, very capable and very senior ranking women codebreakers as well.
Sounds like there's another few books in it, Jackie. What happened to Emily after her wartime, her service?
She had always had a dual life, Joe, and I think that's what's fascinating about the whole time that she's breaking German codes. She's also, at the same time, a musicologist who's translating the letters of Mozart and Beethoven from German.
Wow.
And she's to and from Germany. She's going to Berlin and Bonn and Cologne and Vienna and all these places as, in inverted commas, a civil with the Foreign Office. But in fact, she was the number one British female codebreaker. And the Germans had absolutely no idea what doing for all of those years throughout her career in the First World War, the interwar period, and indeed during the Second World War. So to the degree, Joe, that she actually got an OBE for defeating the Germans, or the Italians, I should say, in Italy. And in 1961, the year before she died, the Germans gave her their highest offer, honour, which was the Order of Merit for her work on Beethoven.
Magic.
Absolutely no idea that she'd actually been breaking their codes for over 30 years at that stage. They'd no idea what she'd been at. So
she succeeded in
playing that game quite well, yeah, I think it's fair to say.
What an incredible secret. She sounds like a character out of a John Banville novel. She's so deceitful, living the double life. And is she remembered in Galway, Jackie?
Actually, she's remembered, but not for her code breaking. She's remembered because of her connection with the musicology end of things, with the letters of Mozart and Beethoven. So the concert hall is called the Emily Anderson Concert Hall.
Oh, very good.
And we have an annual concert, the Emily Anderson Concert, which always features a piece of music from either Beethoven or Mozart. So she's recognised in that sense, but really not even the top boys at GCHQ. And actually, GCHQ was now headed by a woman for the first time, which Emily would have been chuffed about.
Yeah.
But none of them had any idea about the extent of her life. And it was an extraordinary life, as you say. I mean, it was a privilege to, you know, kind of, it was almost like a detective. It was a piece of not just historical research, but of detective work, I suppose, to try and find the woman who didn't want to be found, you know.
Now, so we found relatives of Kay Summersby, which was fantastic.
Brilliant.
We found her nephew, and he had more remarkable information about her. We are looking for relatives of William McCoy from this part of Dublin, who was killed on this day, 23 years of age, Jackie, as you well know through your work in history. There's no war is ever justified in that sense. And has Emily got any relations?
She just has one living relative in the UK. Yeah, and I've spoken to him, and he again was very unaware of what his mother or she's his great aunt actually. She never married, she never had children. So the family bulb but disappeared. But it was very striking today, Joe, just watching was watching some of the D-Day commemorations on TV. And as you said, as a historian, you're reading books and you're doing research, etc. But it was extremely emotional, I have to say, watching the footage of that day and the landings, to see all those young men, you know, jumping out of planes and jumping out of ships and coming up on beaches. And one gentleman said at one point, you know, I waved at my friend and he waved back at me to wish him good luck, and then he fell, and that was that. So, you know, it's the sense of you're alive and then you're dead, but you just plough on because there's a job to be done. And they did it, and they did it selflessly. So it's actually inspirational, and I think for those of us who study history for a living, it's nice to just sit back once in a while and do what you're doing today, which is to talk about it, but put a human face on it, because that's often the case. We don't see those human faces. We see statistics, but we don't see the people. And the people are really what did the deed. They're the ones who saved Europe from fascism. And I think they have to be recognised for that.
Oh,
it's great that that's happening.
Absolutely. And Joe Biden is present. Biden is in his remarks a couple of hours ago. He said, what's happening in Ukraine with the Russian oppression and their expansion and their tyranny is should invoke the same D-Day spirit from all of us. But we were neutral. But still, as I said, 60,000 from the south, 60,000 from the north took part in joined the British Army. In the Second World War, and went to fight against Hitler. Just to bring people up to speed on what's happening, as I say, at this time, 80 years ago on this day, Caen, a lot of people have visited that city in northern France as they go on their camping holidays or whatever. This is what was happening at this time, on this day, 80 years ago. Many of the citizens of the medieval Norman city of Caen have either not heeded or not been aware of the leaflets dropped by the Allies warning them to evacuate the city before a sweeping bombing raid. Now, the aircraft have arrived and only a few hundred of the 60,000 citizens have fled. The young are now rushing to the aid of the wounded and the dying, while ancient buildings, some dating back to William the Conqueror, are being destroyed. As many as 15,000 people are heading for shelter in tunnels to the south of the city, with one citizen describing the bombing a few minutes ago as useless as well as criminal. The grim day in Cayenne began early, with the Gestapo executing 87 prisoners earlier this morning. Believe them. That's, as I say, that's what's happening on this day at this time 80 years ago. And history, when is history on in the Leaving? It's history is on next Wednesday in the Leaving, sir. And anyone doing history and anyone this afternoon saying to themselves, I'm fed up doing history, it's no relevance to my life. Remember, there are people alive today. This will probably be the last time we'll see a lot of them on such an occasion. There are people alive today who fought in World War II. There are people listening to Liveline, and we heard yesterday from one of them who was married to somebody who fought in D-Day, and she's still alive and very, Patricia's still alive and very in great grey health. So it is living history. And then if you go back 80 years to D-Day, go back 80 years before that, and what's happening in the war that you read about in your history books, the American Civil War. That's how close we are to these events. Back after this break. Stay with us, Jackie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, D-Day as it's happening right now, and the Allies are making advance, and it was, everyone accepts, it was one of the most important days in world history. The beginning of the end of the Second World War on this day, 80 years ago. Peter McNamara, who were the D-Day Dodgers?
I'm not sure what you're talking about there now, Joe, but I just came on with a short story about my cousin, Tommy Gittins.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
I'm Peter McNamara. He would have been my first cousin. His mother was Maggie McNamara,
okay,
who, from Park in Limerick. She emigrated about 1910. But Tommy, I was out in New York about 25 years ago.
Okay.
And he didn't seemingly talk about anything in the army. But over a bottle of beer one day, he revealed to me that he landed, I think it was Utah Beach, and on D-Day, he said it was total chaos. The lines were all over the place. Nobody knew where they were going. He managed to grab a hold of a Jeep with some colleagues, got down some roads. The Jeep was blown off the road by a landmine.
Yeah.
He got injured. His colleagues brought him into a tent, the nearest medical tent they could find. It said to me, it turns out to be a Krauts tent, a German tent.
German, okay.
And said they were all surprised. Everybody was looking at each other. Some of the, if his colleagues pulled some guns and just told the surgeon there, get him stitched up as fast as you can. And they did the job. They got him out of there and got back to their lines eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up in a Paris hospital and being injured. I suppose he was brought home then, you know. So it was just a short story about an ordinary GI landing on Utah Beach into the chaos that was, you know, with Germans, Brits, the U.S. Army, the GIs, and
Tommy, I mean, Tommy Gittins.
I just rang your researcher there.
Yeah, it's incredible. But Tommy Gittins, his
Tommy
mother.
Tommy Gittins, he died about 4 or 5 years ago. He was about 95, and he lived to a great age. And he was.
And his mother, his mother was Irish, as like so many.
His mother was Maggie McNamara. Yeah, she came
Maggie
from Park.
McNamara.
Just outside Limerick Park.
Okay.
And
You say his nephew, Tommy's nephew, is very famous, very well known here in Ireland, a congressman.
Congressman Peter King.
Yeah, of course,
Who worked with Clinton, President Clinton, and came down here. We all met him, and he himself and some other congressmen that we were, okay. you know, advising about what was going on, etc. But they were involved in the, you know, in the peace process up there to a big extent.
Yeah. And but Peter, the fascinating thing, obviously, about Tommy, the incredible story, like so many, but that he actually told you this story yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is incredible.
When I told his daughter and his other cousins over, we were having a little bit of a get-together in New York one day, and I said, that's amazing, because he never talks about it.
Right.
And it was I suppose we hadn't met.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably our first time or second time meeting.
Okay, well, well done.
Just
well done
over a bottle of beer.
Yeah.
And he started telling me all this stuff and reminiscing about it. And he said it was such a horrific scene, like, to go into.
The horrors of war. But well done. And well done for you for retailing the story as well, Peter. Very important that it's kept as part of our history as well. Thomas Lynch is the D-Day Dodgers story. Tell me about the... It's an awful phrase. Tell me, Thomas, about the D-Day Dodgers.
Yes, good afternoon. Yeah, the D-Day Dodgers were the Allied servicemen who were fighting in Italy long before D-Day, fighting up through Italy. They'd come over from North Africa, the 8th Army, and the Americans, and they had a lot of trouble at places like Anzio, Monte Cassino.
Of course, yeah.
And allegedly, a politician called them the D-Day Dodgers because they were missing out on D-Day.
And one of them was your uncle, was he not?
That's your correct. My great uncle.
Yes.
My great uncle.
Tell us.
Father Walter Finn.
Okay.
Who left the comfortable surroundings of Blackrock College, where he was a teaching priest, to head up to join the British Army as a chaplain,
okay,
and served in North Africa and in Italy,
wow,
and left a wonderful account of his time in a chapter of a book called A Priest Among the Soldiers, which was a book published about chaplains in the British Army after the war.
And he wrote about his time.
He wrote a very fulsome account of his time,
wow,
in the Army, talking about things like ministering to all the troops of all the different nations and saying masses at basilicas in Italy.
And you sent us in a beautiful quote, a very memorable quote from that chapter about humanity. And have you got it? Where the inhumane reveals the humane in men.
Yes, he was a wonderful writer, I think.
Yeah. And where is he buried, and where are his papers, Thomas?
Well, his papers are in Blackrock College. And he's buried in Dublin. He's buried in Kimmage, I believe.
Okay. Holy Ghost.
He went back to Blackrock after the war. He actually took over from Archbishop McQuaid when he became Archbishop at the college.
Okay. So he would have been, if you go back. So he would have been a contemporary, because De Valera taught maths in Blackrock College. Eamon De Valera.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just reading some of the quite a fulsome obituary about Blackrock, and he invited Patrick Kavanagh to Blackrock, you know, to talk poetry to the students there.
Okay, well done. Okay, well remembered, Thomas. Well, by the way, why did the Tory MP use that awful phrase, the D-Day Dodgers? Should the soldiers, the soldiers themselves would have no say in where they were sent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and Italy was
really rough.
I mean, it's denied that it's one of these stories that some people deny it, but the song has actually been recorded by many people, including the Pansy Brothers.
Okay, it's called the D-Day Dodgers.
It's called and it's sung to the tune of Lily Marlene.
Okay. Thomas Lynch, good to meet you, Margaret. Thomas is in Lincolnshire. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Richard Foy, you want to remember your grandfather, Evan Lewis Jones?
Yes, that's correct, Joe. Hi, how's it going?
Good, tell us about him.
Yeah, he was. He's my granddad from Wales, from a place in Cardigan, which is southwest Wales. And he was alive until 1989.
Okay, and where was he on this day, so to speak? Do we know where he was?
On this day, he was in Torquay waiting to board the U-boat or the vessel to cross to Normandy.
Yeah.
And he arrived up on Sword Beach.
Wow.
I know there was a delay because they were meant to land on the 5th, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
But so they were all kind of held up in the different ports along the coast there.
And your grandfather, I keep mentioning K-N-C-A-E-N, but your grandfather was there.
He was there, yeah. So his orders were to reach Cannes as quickly as possible. So he would have arrived up on Sword Beach after a lot of the carnage and destruction of a lot of the soldiers beforehand. And his mission then was to get to Cannes. And within, I think it was about 8.5 miles from Sword Beach to Cannes. So when he arrived there, then they were camped out and they were under a lot of fire from German aircraft because it was a big battle even to get from Sword to Cannes to where he was. Like, you know what I mean? It was fighting all the way along.
Well, I'll tell you what's happening at 3 o'clock as we approach it 80 years ago on this day. The German hierarchy still believe that the landings in Normandy are a distraction. They're expecting the landing somewhere else. German troops have counterattacked against the Americans at Omaha Beach. But by 3:20, it becomes clear the counterattacks, which are happening as we speak, have failed. The Gestapo have just murdered 80 French resistant fighters being held in that city you mentioned, Cannes prison. And the killings carry on throughout this afternoon. And at 3:30, the British gain control of Ouistreham port. And another assault begins, but an incredible day in world history. And I'm sure looking at the screen, more people tomorrow want to talk about living history. Catherine Thomas is next, by the way. Today's producer is Annette Egan, and we'll be back tomorrow with more, I suspect, more D-Day stories, and you'll hear a lot of them throughout today. Richie Byrne is on research, Shane Galvin is the broadcast coordinator, and Chris O'Connor is sound, and as I say, Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.